As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to Power Hour, The Athletic's Tuesday National College Sports Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Nicole Auerbach. And I am thrilled this week to be joined by my friend and colleague, Chantel Jennings of The Athletic, to break down all the biggest storylines in college sports and in specifically women's college basketball in an hour or less, as promised. And Chantel, we made it. We made it through the women's tournament. You filed 45,000 words, great words, great coverage the whole time. But anyway, welcome to the pod. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. And it's funny because a lot of people don't realize in women's college basketball, the draft comes right away. There's no rest. There's no let up. There's no, you know, sort of camp for the players to go to. It's like a week later. So we have the draft, the WNBA draft coming up this Thursday.
So why is that? Like there's no combine, there's no whole pre-draft process. Is there a reason?
I think it's mostly the schedule that the WNBA starts in May. So okay, there's not really time for it.
Okay. Well, we are catching you right in between. So barely slept, pre-vacation. It's fine. And just for our listeners at home, I think it's very important to know we're recording this over Zoom, so I can see this amazing pink chandelier in the background because Chantel just moved and the previous owner picked this monstrosity out. And it is just the perfect backdrop, Chantel. I'm just enjoying it.
Yeah, it's been pretty funny doing moving in the middle of a pandemic was one thing. Moving right before the conference tournament started is sort of like, you know, cut me off at my knees, why don't you? But the levels of me trying to find an appropriate corner in this house that doesn't have a chandelier in it. And it's funny because it's not like a chandelier house. You say chandelier and people are like, where did you move? And it's like, no, it's not that kind of a house at all. They just put chandeliers up in every room, I think to make it fancy. And so whenever I'm calling in for Zooms for the tournament or for availability through that, because I covered it remotely, I was like, you know, terrified every time I turn on my computer because I'm like, can you see a chandelier with me at this angle? But I figured because you said
how many are there?
I think there's at least six.
Wow.
Six. And so this is clearly the content college sports fans are looking for, my chandelier breakdowns. But yeah, I mean it's unfortunate because I'm sure there are people who would appreciate this kind of a chandelier. And actually I had a friend I had made a joke on Instagram about it. And she said, oh my gosh, we actually had that light in my 5-year-old daughter's room. And I was like, yeah, that kind of what it looks like, right? So this is my office.
Well, I love that. And it makes it memorable, especially for all the Zooms you've been on last year.
Well, you said we're not doing video. And so I was like, well, you can see it because you've seen
that the chandelier. It doesn't mean
I was
that
like,
we
this
can't.
Is fine, but now we can just talk about it.
We can talk about it. Just picture like a Barbie pink chandelier, everyone listening.
With crystals hanging down.
With crystals hanging down. It is, again, I think the backdrop is important to think about, but it's probably better in your imagination than even what I'm looking for. So Chantel, you mentioned that you covered the women's basketball tournament remote. And I mean, this year was so weird with that. I mean, it's not necessarily even clear like how much would have been different if you were there with all the COVID protocols and everything was virtual for post game and everything anyway. So let's talk about the games because that was exactly the same. We can watch them from home. I did some work with SiriusXM around the Final Four for the women's tournament. We're going to get into all the issues, the equity stuff later in this conversation, but I guess my first question is, what will you remember most about this tournament run, championship game, kind of those overarching on-court storylines?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, what I'll really remember is that the first day was all chalk. I think every single game, the Hires, like the seed that was supposed to win won. Which was sort of this weird start because I had been thinking, you know, it's the weirdest season in college basketball. Like this is going to be the weirdest tournament. I had put no number one seeds in my Final Four. And then the first day is all chalk and I'm thinking like, oh shit, like what have I done? I'm going to look like such an idiot at the end of this. But then it got interesting. And I think what I'll remember most is sort of the emergence of Erin McDonald from Arizona. She not only raised her draft stock, but I think in a time when women's basketball is on the rise in terms of people watching, in terms of people knowing names, whether it's Paige Beckers or Sabrina Ionescu or now Erin McDonald, she put herself in that conversation. And you don't, you know, we've covered sports for a long time, literally you and I together, our entire careers. And you see performances where it's like one game, maybe, and it's like, wow, that's the best game of their career. But to do that like four times in a row in the national championship, after, you know, I had watched this Arizona team, the words I had used to sort of describe them was, I think they're running out of gas toward the Pac-12 tournament. And so I had them losing, I believe, in the second round because I was like, oh, they're just running out of gas. Their bench is getting a little shorter. I don't know how their bigs are going to do once they get into the tournament and they have to play every other day kind of a thing. And it was Erin. She just put this team on her back and sort of willed them and played their way to the national championship. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I feel like that was something that broke through, right? Like Erin became a household name. I could tell that everyone who's in the casual sports world, the sports writing world, people who don't always pay attention to, you know, the women's Final Four, whatever, despite the fact that it's been like, what, 3 or 4 years now of just like phenomenal semifinals, everyone was paying attention to Erin. Everyone, anything she said, post-game press conference going viral, and her coach, Adia Barnes. And you knew Adia, that was part of, and we're going to get into this, but you really raised the issue of how the tournament was set up for moms. And Adia ended up talking about that a lot throughout the run. She feels like a face of women's college basketball now. Is that accurate? Is that like just because I want her to be my personal coach that I am saying this? what does like kind of her ascension and like as part of Arizona reaching, you know, kind of levels it's never gotten to, but it feels like it, when she's going to say stuff from now on, we're going to listen.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I think she is, in terms of coaching, you know, she hasn't been a head coach that long. She's not someone that most people, at most casual sports fans sort of knew. But I think what I sort of realized from my first conversation with her and what people realized in this tournament is like, she's so honest. She's so authentic. She's going to tell you what she's thinking. And she's not afraid to speak up about things. And I think right now, especially, those are sort of the voices that people really want to hear. And in this tournament specifically, as you reference, with the number of inequities that were between the women's and the men's bubbles, but also for parents in the bubble. It was the first time we've seen two Black head coaches in the Final Four. Like, she was speaking up and representing so much at a time when I think people want to see that. And she's like genuinely funny. She's sarcastic. She's a great interview, like everything that sort of can help her on that stage. But I also think it's like, you know, there was that viral moment where she sort of stuck her middle finger up with her team in the huddle after a game. And it was just sort of like, I think everyone, like, you know, there's not a facade there. When you hear other coaches who've been in this business for 10, 20, 30 years, you sort of listen to them and you're like, you know what they're going to say. You can sort of see them, like, it's all going through their head before they say it. They're buttoned up, whatever. And it's not to say she's not that, but I think the way in which she is so authentic and so herself, like after she did that middle finger thing, I was like, oh my gosh, I like want to work out now. Like, yeah, F that. Like I think everyone felt that way. And so she's been really fun to cover. And I think she is going to have a huge future in this game. She's got her first call up to coach with USA basketball this week or next week. So she's already sort of making those strides.
Yeah. I feel like it was like a 3-week recruiting pitch and we all want to go play for her now.
No, it's like, you never played basketball. Please recruit me. I'll play for the podcast. Yeah, like I'll be a water girl. Like, just
seriously,
put me on the team.
I want to be in the huddle. I want to be in the huddle. I just want someone to be so adamant that they love me and they don't care about everybody else, you know, what everyone else says. I mean, I agree. Cause I think it was that viral moment that kind of took her to a new level where there was just a different level of like appreciation of like how she coaches, because that was a moment that she didn't expect to get captured. And it's not something someone would do if they thought about it and were kind of like,
you wouldn't see Gino or Emma do that. Let's say that.
Yeah. Gino wouldn't do that. And not to say that other coaches don't use that language, don't use those motivational tactics, but people are concerned about their image. And I think that because you saw that glimpse of like the privacy and the way that she responded and said, she's not going to apologize for it. She loves on her team. This is how she coaches. Was just awesome. And that's what I think you're seeing, these different like kind of emerging faces of women's basketball after for so long. It was Pat Summitt and, you know, you had Muffet and you had Gino and Tara, and we'll get to Tara in a second, but it's cool now that like Dawn Staley's voice like really matters. And I feel like Adia can get there too, or it maybe is there already. I think you mentioned like diversity, and this is like a time where people really want to hear from different perspectives. The idea of being a mom to a very young child and managing that and like posting about like 4 a.m. like blowout diapers and all these things during this, I also felt like we often think diversity in terms of like just gender or sexual orientation or like the color of your skin, but it's all different things. It's like all different backgrounds. And I thought that was a cool moment too. You know, Holly Rowe bringing up how she was late coming out of, you know, the halftime at the national championship game because she was pumping, all of these different dynamics, which is like women in these professions all have different experiences while doing them. And I feel like that's an element of diversity that we don't think about, but became very clear during this tournament.
Yeah. And actually, as you were saying all that, I wanted to say, you know, also, let's not forget, just like, she's a really damn good coach. Like, this is the team that went 6-24, like 4 years ago.
Which is insane. Insane how
that is. Unreal. Like, and that's what I think also makes Airy sort of this icon for that program, is that she was on that 6-24 team. She was sitting out for transfer rules, but like she lived it. And, you know, Sam Thomas, who's coming back for another year, like cried throughout that year. Like she'd never lost so many. She had lost maybe 6 games her entire high school career. And then they lost 24 her freshman year. And it was still like, and that's what is really cool, is that even in the midst of that, Kate Reese, who was a McDonald's All-American, sort of these players who were great, like saw Adia then, and they saw who she was and who we're all seeing now, who's sort of on TV and sort of on this platform. But to go back to your initial question, yeah, she represents so much. And I think the fact that in women's basketball, you know, we look at men's basketball, 100% of the coaches are men. Like, why isn't that true in women's basketball? Why aren't 100% of the women's basketball coaches women? It's, I believe, 60%, and far fewer are Black women. But so she represents all of us, but she represents a mother. And she also represents a former WNBA player. And I think that's also important, because this generation of players that are coming up right now, they've grown up with a consciousness of the WNBA. You know, previous generations of players, like there wasn't a pro option in the US, really, or a reliable one, let's say. But, you know, they knew if they wanted to play after college, they were going to have to go abroad. And Adia is a player that has won at every level. She won a WNBA championship. You know, she played with Sue Bird. She played with Lauren Jackson, like these icons in the sport at the pro level. She knows them, like they're cheering for her. And so I think that's also important. And Dawn Staley's in that group too, you know, a former pro player in the US. And so I think it's just, it is cool that she represents so much to so many and that people are listening to her.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
So I wanted to actually ask you about that point you just made about growing up with the WNBA. Because one of the things I keep asking everyone who's smarter than me in this space is how they attribute the growth in, it's not necessarily just like straight parity, because it's not like 16s are going to beat ones or anything. It's like, but the depth at the top of the game, and the fact that, like you mentioned, that you and your bracket didn't pick one seeds, like there were at least 8 or 9 teams that, you know, people saw a path to winning a national championship when the bracket was made. And do you, how much do you think having a pro league for literally your entire life for these female athletes growing up has contributed to this? Like, what are some of the reasons that you think it's not just UConn and everybody else, but that like the talent is distributed and there really are a number of programs kind of at that top elite level right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, there's sort of like the Title IX generation where it was like, they got opportunities, these women got opportunities, and then they made the most of those. And I think the generation we're seeing now are sort of the players who were molded by the Title IX generation in a lot of ways. And so I think coaching at the youth level has gotten better. I think AAU has become more well-rounded and the teams are producing better players, better athletes at the college level. I think just coaching even at the college level has probably gotten better. Team USA has invested so much into its youth teams. You look at a lot of those players who were on, you know, on the Final Four stage, whether it was Haley Jones or Paige Beckers or Aaliyah Boston, like all of those players have had Team USA experience at the youth level. And so I think there's sort of all of these routes. And I do think a part of it is that, you know, obviously it's not sort of the same pay structure as the NBA. And we don't need to get into that, but it is an opportunity and it's there, it's not going away. And so I think players do see that. They see it as a viable route for after college. And the game itself has just been elevated because of that. You know, I don't know why exactly, you know, there are specific stars who can shoot from the logo like Caitlin Clark so well. You know, she's just sort of this crazy shooting talent. But, you know, I don't think there's one thing that sort of molded her. But I will say, you know, I think she is someone who grew up and, you know, she probably had NBA mentors that she looked at or NBA players that she looked at. But all of these players also have WNBA players and women's college players that they grew up watching as well. And also, you know, they're probably, this is a group that while they were in high school, more women's basketball games were on TV. And also not all of the talent is going to UConn now. I think for a long time, if you were a top 10 player, you were going to UConn or Tennessee. And then a few other schools popped in there, right? But now it's like you're seeing these top talents who are choosing other routes, and you're seeing the emergence of other schools. Like UCLA has had the craziest last 2 weeks with the transfer portal and with some like recruiting signees, and Arizona is rising, and Stanford has always been good. And so you look at these West Coast schools that are sort of like also bringing in that level of talent. And so I think it's more, there's more talent, and that talent is being dispersed more evenly, probably.
Yeah, I think that's what I've noticed. You know, you mentioned like players at like Iowa and UCLA and Arizona and all these places that we're not used to talking about that way.
We're not used to talking about the women's teams that way.
The women's team. Yeah. And just like a special shout. I mean, we all saw the numbers and the kind of the estimated figures, but those are the stars that are going to really cash in NIL. Like Caitlin Clark at Iowa is going to make a ton of money. That is an incredibly marketable athlete in an incredibly marketable market. So, you know, just to keep an eye on that, I always like to push back against that narrative. It's not just going to be quarterbacks. It's going to be, you know, UCLA gymnasts who go viral and Paige Beckers and all of that. But I did want to, you know, touch on the actual national champs and Tara Vanderveer. And you talked about like this generation of players being coached by those who had opportunities open because of Title IX, and Tara's life story is such an example of that, basically getting into coaching because positions were created for Title IX reasons. I've always enjoyed talking to her. I've always enjoyed talking to her players about her. Loved hearing in your story about her swimming and her connections to the Stanford swim team. But I just cannot get over how unique it is to have won national championships 29 years apart. Like your players were not alive. And also the game changes so much during that period. Coaches don't stay places like that all the time. I mean, it just, it feels like that's never going to happen again because someone's going to get frustrated and like fire a coach, even though they're really good, but they just can't win a national championship. I don't know. Tell me what to make of Tara's championship in that context. The last one she won was 92.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about longevity in sports, not women's sports, not basketball, just sports, like there aren't many stories like Tara Vanderveer's. And it's not just that, you know, she's stayed at Stanford for a long time. I'm going to pull up her, you know, to see what her worst season has ever been, because it really hasn't been any, you know, bad. She has won. You know, when she got to Stanford, it wasn't a great job. And then she turned it into, you know, they sort of called it, they now, you know, they called it Stanford and the 11 Dwarves. At the time, it was the Pac-10, so probably Stanford and the 9 Dwarves. Like, there wasn't a whole lot of women's basketball talent on the West Coast. But as that conference has risen, as different schools made hires, you know, Oregon hires Kelly Graves from Gonzaga, Oregon State hires Scott Ruick, UCLA hires Corey Close, Washington had hired McGuff and the neighbors, like, so all of these other programs within that conference are hiring really good coaches, and she maintains that excellence. And she didn't, you know, she wasn't winning the conference championship every year in the tournament or in the regular season, but her teams were always up there. And to go back to kind of what we were talking about before in terms of representation and equity, like another really cool thing about Tara is that she hasn't hired a male assistant in like 3.5 decades. Like, there are some coaches who have talked a lot about, you know, we need to get women into the game. And then you look at their stabs and you're like, well, really? You think that? Like, your words and your actions don't really match here. If you have 3 assistants and 2 of them are guys and you're out there saying like, we need more women in this profession. But Tara has only had female assistants. And so I think, you know, and some of those assistants have gone on to have great jobs and some of them have stayed with her. And so I think that's also really cool. But look, okay, so I'm looking back at her. So her first season at Stanford, she went 13-15, 1-7 in the, I guess then it was the Pacific West, and then it became the Pac-10. So then she went 8-10, 14-4. By her fourth season, they were undefeated in the conference. They won it and they got to the Elite Eight. So almost her rise in the conference is sort of similar to Adia's, which was also another really cool element of this, you know, sort of national championship game. And the fact that Tara had coached against Adia when Adia was a player at Arizona. I think she went 7-1 against Adia when she was a player, but her longevity is second to none.
When you look at the sport as a whole right now, I mean, we've talked about the spreading of the talent and the different teams. And a lot of the players you've mentioned outside of Airy are coming back. Paige Beckers, Haley Jones, Caitlin Clark, they're all going to be back. How do you like describe the health of the sport? I mean, it feels like it's growing. There's a lot more interest. You know, it's really compelling storylines. We've talked about different coaches emerging as kind of like new faces of the sport. How healthy is it?
I think it's very healthy. I think it's on the upswing as well, which, you know, that doesn't always happen, but it feels, and obviously, you know, this is sort of the world that I'm living in. And so I'm in a little bit of a bubble right now in terms of being in this women's basketball world, but it does feel as though if you look back at the last 3 years of sort of names coming out of the college game, and you've paid more attention to the men's game, so you can weigh in here. But I would say three of the hottest names, maybe the three most, you can maybe throw in a men's name here, is probably Sabrina Ionescu, Paige Beckers, and Airy McDonald. Like, maybe there's a men's player in there as well, but it's like three of the top five are women's players, and they're all young. They're all, you know, two of them basically are going to be WNBA rookies this year because Sabrina was injured so early last season. Paige has, you know, 3 to 4, if she wants it, you know, more seasons of college basketball. I think, as you mentioned, NIL is going to change a lot at the college level, but women's basketball players are going to benefit greatly from that. You mentioned sort of Caitlin Clark as a player who's going to benefit from NIL. Haley Van Lith, who's a freshman at Louisville, has the most Instagram followers of anyone we've mentioned. She has like 750,000 Instagram followers. And she's not even in that sort of first circle that we mentioned, even though she's an excellent player, Team USA type talent. And so, yeah, I think we're going to see so many players benefit from this. And Ozzie Fudd, who's going to be a freshman at UConn next season, you know, she's a player we haven't talked about yet, but she's going to be in that group as well. UConn's going to be ridiculously stacked next year, but
good for them. It's been too long for them.
I know, you got to feel for a program like that, right? So it's interesting.
No, I think you're right. And again, I consider myself kind of in that casual sports fan, like being drawn to this sport, being drawn to women's basketball, learning a lot about these players and the compelling storylines. And I love it. And I also feel like there's like a level of animosity between certain coaches, certain players, certain teams. The WNBA,
so good for the game.
It's like, really good. It's really
we need
good.
Some, like, I forget, you know, we were watching a few players this year. I was texting with some friends while we were watching the games, and I was like, you need some villains. Like, it's good for the sport. Like, I want some players that are going to go out there and just, like, you know, talk shit. Like,
yeah,
I want that. You know, I'm sure that there are coaches who would prefer that's not the case, and maybe the NCAA as well. But, you know, like, when I think of, you know, Airy had that great line about, like, you know, she's like, I was just like on another level. I was just playing. And she had that, like, she crossed her arms after one play. It was either in the Final Four or the national championship game. And it was like, I'm the stuff. And I was like, damn, like, I want to watch players who think that and say that, because
agree.
It's true.
I agree. Before we go, though, we have to hit on the overall storylines around the tournament, which unfortunately kind of overshadowed a lot of these amazing moments.
We talked about the basketball first. Like, it's been, I think that was the most frustrating thing for me, was that, you know, the inequities, they popped up. I mean, they didn't pop up. They've been there for generations, but, like, you know, they came to the forefront of the conversation. And then we spent the first like 3 days of the women's tournament talking about them. And it was, you know, I had written that the NCAA hurt its women's teams
yes.
twice, once in not treating them equally, and a second time because the basketball wasn't even discussed until like the second round of the tournament. And so I'm really glad that you and I talked about like the actual players and the programs and the coaches first, because so many people are like, oh my gosh, there's inequities. And I'm like, yeah, well, duh. Like,
Yeah, I was like, I think by like the Final Four, at least like probably Sweet 16, because there were some thrillers and like Baylor, mm-hmm. Michigan and stuff. I felt like we kind of finally moved away from it. But I do think like looking back when we think of like, okay, the 2021 tournaments,
right?
It will
it's
be a
huge
thing.
Story.
It mm-hmm. will be a thing.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
So now that we're out of it, the NCAA has hired this law firm to look at gender equity issues. I guess like coming out of everything that happened, because we saw it in the weight room, you wrote about issues for mothers and infants and babies. There was, you know, the testing, different types of COVID testing, gift bags, which I kind of like, it's the dumbest one, but also the one I latch onto the most because it would have been the easiest to make exactly the same for the men and the women. Like what coming out of this, what needs to change? Like, what are you, when you hear, okay, an outside law firm equity review, gender equity review, that can go a lot of different directions. Like, I mean, what would you like to see? What would you like the NCAA to reckon with?
I would like there to be public accountability. You know, I think that and what I think is really interesting about right now, like we were talking about Adia Barnes speaking up, but it's like Adia, Dawn, Nell Fortner, Tara Vanderveer, Kim Barnes-Rico, like you have all of these female coaches, Muffet McGraw, like who are going to hold the NCAA's feet to the fire on this. Like this isn't going away. I think the bubble was one of these sort of really unique experiences that because it was two vacuums and the NCAA had to fill both of those vacuums, like it was just so blatant and it was so painfully obvious to the women. And so I think, you know, not that it wouldn't have been sort of something that they spoke up about, but I think it was just in previous years, it was like, hey, this isn't fair. This isn't equal. This isn't right. And it was sort of like, well, but what's your evidence? And like, you know, they could kind of push it to the side, but here it's like the side-by-side photos don't lie. And I also think, you know, Sedona Prince's video, her TikTok, like, I don't know how many views that has at this point, 15 million maybe. People are aware. And because, you know, not that this matters, but like the games were so exciting. People watched. It was the first time that all 63 games were televised. The ratings were up. More people are watching. And I think more people are willing to speak up. But at the front of that group, you have these coaches who are sort of newer faces in the sport, but also icons like Tara. And they've been Olympic coaches. They've been Team USA coaches. And I think they are going to demand accountability. What does that mean exactly? We'll see. But I think that it's going to change moving forward. And I also think, you know, this generation of players, because of the platforms they have, like I said, you know, some of these players have hundreds of thousands of followers on Instagram or Twitter or TikTok, and they are not afraid to speak up and they are using their voices. And again, it's sort of these young women who have been raised by the Title IX generation to say like, no, screw this. I'm going to say what I believe and I'm going to stand up for what's right. And I'm going to stand up when something's wrong. And this is wrong. And so I don't think the NCAA has a complete understanding of how strong the voices are going to be between the women's players and the coaches, because there were plenty of coaches who also said, you know, in the tournament, like, let's talk about women's basketball. When we get out of the bubble, there's going to be a time and a place for this. And, you know, I respect everyone's decision to sort of handle it how they want. I don't think we've seen the end of coaches sort of speaking up, releasing statements, demanding accountability. And I think those choruses are only going to grow larger and louder.
Yeah. And I think too, I mean, theoretically, this review is going to look at all championships and, you know, are the lacrosse championships the same? Is there drastic differences? So I think all of that is going to be good. One of the strangest side effects of all of this was, I feel like for the first time in our careers, people finally started to think about, why is the men's thing called the Final Four and March Madness, and the women's is the women's Final Four and the women's tournament, and why is it labeled differently? And we, I feel like we have had these conversations for years mm-hmm. about like this idea of othering, like one of them had to be labeled, but one gets to be the main thing. So the other one is the other thing.
Well, and it was just, and the like, issue comes in when it's always the women are the other thing. And so yeah. I think a lot of people, you know, I had tweeted about sort of the logos, and there were some people that were like, oh, this isn't as big of a deal. And I was like, no, but it's like virtue signaling in terms of what's the norm? What is the deviation from the norm? Women. There's sports and then there's women's sports. There's basketball and then there's women's basketball. There's the National Basketball Association. Then there's the Women's National Basketball Association. But when every single norm is men, that's, you know, you're saying it. You're saying it literally that the women are the other.
And I feel like that message got through this time, which in the past people have kind of rolled their eyes at. But it became really apparent. And then I think, you know, obviously you saw the differences in like the courts themselves and the D2 insignia everywhere and the volleyball court lines, like all of those things. Right. And you're like, I would never do this for the men's tournament. So you had like so many examples that were obvious. You know, I was talking to an athletic director who was saying like, you know, honestly, like some of the stuff that went viral, like it might've been worse because again, you were talking about like the specific facilities and the way that they were like set up and didn't feel like a championship event, all of those things. So very curious to see how this all shakes out. You know, I had a story a couple weeks ago about just how frustrated people were with the NCAA's response to it. You know, and Mark Emmert, particularly as the face of the organization, I think your point about athletes having this kind of direct line to fans and the public and to us is something I don't know the NCAA has fully grasped and understood that Sedona Prince's video is not just some little video. It didn't like just go viral because of TikTok. It's because she was able to say like, here's how I feel and what I see in my unfiltered opinion about it. And in the past, like if there were issues, I mean, you still would have had to have the right person brought to a press conference that was moderated by the NCAA and like stuff doesn't come out. But I think, you know, there were days where people were getting more and more angry, right? There was, you know, very little accountability. Mark Emmert really wasn't commenting on it and was kind of putting the, you know, the people in charge of the basketball tournaments out to deflect and to, you know, get all the blame. And I think that it's, again, it's kind of like a lack of understanding, like that this was really serious right out of the gate and people were really upset about it. And then just like, this is not what this is supposed to be. This is an organization that, yes, it's a membership organization, but they put on the championships. Championships are supposed to be the best thing that they do. And they're not coming close here in a year where, to your point, like everything actually was the same. They didn't have on-campus sites. They didn't have all of this. And it felt like it took maybe even a full week for Emmert and the NCAA to realize like how upset everyone was and that it wasn't bad PR. It wasn't whatever. Like these were fundamental issues in the way that they were approaching these things. And if, you know, if the women's tournament wasn't talking to the men's in terms of planning, why was that? Like, that's a fundamental issue with the NCAA and the priorities of the actual office in Indianapolis. So it just like kept building and building and building. And that's another, to your point, like, it's not just going to be the coaches that are mad about this. Like, I was talking to commissioners and athletic directors all over the country, at all levels, and people are pissed. And like, this is not going to go away now that the tournament is over.
Yeah, I think it's only going to grow louder. And, you know, I've talked a lot about it's like, oh, you know, this generation that was like raised by Title IX players and women, you know, but it's not equal. It's not equitable still. I think probably the most telling thing when I was talking with players after the video and the photo of the weight room differences was released, I was saying, you know, are you surprised? And no one was surprised. None of these players were surprised. They, you know, this has been their existence as a female athlete. Like, yes, they have had opportunities that other women before them didn't have, but they know that it's never been equal to what the men have gotten. They know that, you know, their high school teams and their AAU teams got less than the men or the boys. And so I think the fact that it's like, you're not just getting sort of a group of young women and coaches who are saying like, oh, this is the first time that I feel slighted. This is the first time that, you know, I'm noticing this. You are getting a group of players and coaches who are saying like, this has happened for decades. Like, enough is enough. Like, how many times? And I think this was sort of a tipping point of sorts in terms of, you know, because it was in the bubble, because it was so obvious. And again, I think having other voices speak up, you know, no one is alone in this. Like Sedona Prince, you know, she is sort of at the forefront of it in terms of the players right now, but she's not alone. There's plenty of other women beside her, and you know, Tara and Adia and Dawn are not alone in speaking up and sort of leading the charge. There's a ton of coaches alongside them. And like you said, commissioners, athletic directors, senior women's advisors within athletic departments. And so it's going to be interesting, especially as we move into this review, to sort of see how large this group becomes and how vocal they become and how public they really take their fight and how they demand accountability from the NCAA and how they demand equality from the NCAA.
Absolutely agree. And we'll be all over it at The Athletic. This is a good transition point to our last call segment, because I've got a last call tangentially tied to this. So for listeners and for Chantel, because this is your first one, basically the way it works is it's whatever you would do at 2 a.m. at a bar. You want to cheers to something. You're either like really giddy about something, you're really happy about it, we got to celebrate it, or you're mad about something, we got to rant about something, and you're still going to have that last drink. So I will go first, and mine is a rant, and it's spinning off of what you were just saying about how this has always been the case for women's sports and how so many of these statements from the coaches that we heard were like, the only thing that was surprising about this is just that people are noticing, because this is how we've been treated forever. And so my rant is about that. We just need to get rid of this idea that female athletes are just happy to be there. They should just be happy to be included, happy to have a championship. Mm-hmm. We're past that. Okay. Like, it has been decades upon this. We both played sports growing up. We understand, yes, absolutely, it's important to participate. It's great to be active. But how is that? How are we still at this point where, like, you're just supposed to be happy for whatever scraps and crumbs you get? No, like, you can demand more. And that's what these women did during this tournament, is they demanded more. They demanded better facilities. They demanded better treatment. They just demanded to be thought of as championship athletes, which they were, and not just happy to be there. I was seeing people share stories about how, like, when they played in college, and, you know, if there was like a food spread set up outside of the locker room, and no, it was actually for the men, and people were upset about that. Like, what? Like, oh, you were just, oh, congratulations, you were able to use the court for an hour, and, you know, great, like, you should be happy about that. And I just think we need to get rid of that. Like, we just need to be done with that. No apologizing for asking for more and demanding more. And that's really what equity is, not necessarily equality, right? It's about treatment, and it's about, like, access to things. No one's saying, you know, spend exactly the same amount of money on the women's tournament as the men's, but there's a huge gap between that and what happened this past month. And so I just think we need to get rid of this idea that, like, women should be grateful for whatever scraps they get. And I'm glad that there's a lot of pushback to that idea finally in the year 2021, and that hopefully that changes in women's sports, because these are elite athletes. These are marketable athletes. This is high level competition. Like, it's not just, you know, your third grade basketball team playing at a gym and you're like, great, like, okay, let's get ice cream at the end. Like, this is not that. Don't treat elite athletes that way. Okay. Your turn for a last call. It actually doesn't have to be about sports, and it doesn't have to be serious, but I was like, this is mine.
No, that was good. I'll stick on that. I'll say cheers to, we can cheers. So we can pretend we're at Rick's, the gambler, yes. I believe, is about to play.
Yes.
So cheers to your national championship, Stanford Cardinal. And also cheers to the men's national champions, your Baylor Bears. let's other that.
All right. Cheers to that. Very like wholesome, very like an actual cheers. But yes, it was two incredible tournaments, some incredible games along the way. And we got it in, which again, like 3 months ago, I'm not sure people would necessarily thought we did. So,
oh, I didn't think it was going to happen from the beginning. Like, oh, literally, it was like the first day. I was like, "Is this? Are we really going to get to April? Who knows?"
So. And we did. We did somehow. Awesome. Well, Chantel, thank you so much for joining Power Hour. This was great. We'd love to have you back sometime when you've slept a little more.
Thanks for having me.
And the chandelier, also really glad to have the chandelier.
And I like, my dog made an appearance.
I saw Harlow. It's honestly very excited. I'm glad that we recorded this via Zoom so I could see all those things while we recorded audio. That'll be it for Power Hour. I'm Nicole Auerbach. I'll be back next Tuesday. Andy Staples and Ari Wasserman will be back with their usual antics on this feed the rest of the week. We still need to explain it up to Ari exactly how much strollers cost and how much being a father is going to cost him financially. I think it's going to be an ongoing series. We'll find out more as they continue to dive in. Power Hour will be back next Tuesday. Thank you for listening.